Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Legal Geeks. I'm here today, as always, with my blogging buddy, Josh Gilliland, but we also have a special guest with us today, Matt Weinhold, a.k.a. that guy who was in That Thing. You've known him, you've seen him, you love him. He's a writer, he's a comedian, he's a nerd extraordinaire. He has been all over and done too many cool things for words. And so we are going to talk to him today, not about everything he has done, because that would take hours and hours. It would be a ton of fun. But we are actually here today to talk about a geek love that is close to Josh's heart, one I'm working my way into, and one that is also closest to Matt's heart, Doctor Who. Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks so much for being here. I'm very excited to talk to you, but, you know, I have to warn you, before I can let you know, anybody talk to Josh, I've got to make sure that you know as much about Doctor Who as Josh does.
Wow. I don't know, but I'm going to do my best, but... Yeah.
All
it's
right,
a show on television, right?
That's right.
Okay. All right.
Let's start with this basic question. Do you know how many doctors there have been?
How many doctors there have been? Well, I guess I might go controversial on this.
Ooh.
But it's either 13 or 14.
Ooh, wow.
Now, I know people say that it's 12, but no... John Hurt is a doctor, okay? I don't care what anybody says. He doesn't deserve the name. It's bullshit. He's a doctor, all right? I'm getting tired of this. Josh, you know me. There's a line that once I cross it, I can't go back. And I don't want to do that on this show.
I respect that. That's good. A man of principle, you're sticking to your guns. The conviction is there. It doesn't matter if the facts are contrary or not. Josh,
okay,
all right.
Okay, now wait a minute.
I agree with Matt. I mean, I have my war doctor, Sonic Screwdriver.
Thank you.
And yeah, no, John Hurt was a doctor, and just because David Tennant was one twice, yes, that royally messed up the numbering.
Wow. Right. All right. I didn't know this was such an issue.
Now this is also a doctor, but it's sort of outside the regular continuity, but that would also be Peter Cushing. But we can talk about that later.
Okay, I am impressed. Well, you're off to a good start here.
All right, good.
Let's back it up a little bit. Tell me, when did you first watch Doctor Who and get into Doctor Who?
Well, speaking of Peter Cushing, the first Doctor Who I ever saw was I was about 6 or 7, had been like, I don't know, 1971 or 72 or something like that. And my first doctor was Peter Cushing. And Peter Cushing was, in the movies, they made these movies that were sort of based on the William Hartnell episodes that featured the Daleks, the very first Dalek episode, and then the Dalek Invasion of the Earth. And so they made two color movies. Peter Cushing sort of filling in that role. He's a slightly different doctor. He's less cantankerous, a little more of a befuddled kind of professor. And, now with all my knowledge of the doctors, maybe not the best doctor, but he was my first doctor. And he was my first, those movies were my first introduction into the Daleks. And the minute I first set eyes on the Daleks and heard, "Exterminate!" I flipped my gourd. And anytime those movies were on, oh, I was there. And it took me years to... I didn't even know there was a TV series. It took
wow.
Me, I think I was in junior high school when I was like, there's a show, right? Like, no, what? So, yeah, and then I jumped in on the Tom Bakers.
So at this point, have you gone back and watched all the Doctor Whos, or are there really just certain doctors you like sticking with?
I have probably watched everything that exists.
Wow.
There might be a couple William Hartnells. Like, I don't think I've ever seen like Marco Polo, or I forget if that's a lost one, but there are a couple, I think, early William Hartnells maybe that I haven't seen, but I've seen pretty much everything. I own most of what is available on DVD, and I haven't gotten through. They found a couple lost episodes. And one of them is Enemy of the World, and I just started that. I haven't got through it. But yeah, and Then there are some of the lost episodes that they didn't have. They only had the audio because back then kids would just like record with their tape recorders the sound. So okay. They were able to do some episodes of like lost seasons, like the Dalek Master Plan with William Hartnell. And they managed to do a whole like audio book kind of thing with some narration providing the interstitials. And so, yeah, there's a lot of lost episodes that I've listened to. So, yeah, I've experienced quite a bit of Doctor Who.
You know, so are there like, you know, there's Comic-Con, of course, and things like that. Are there any seminars or specific things for Doctor Who? And if so, have you gone to any of these kind of conferences or seminars?
Okay, this is what really, really annoys me.
Uh-oh.
There is a thing called Gallifrey One, which is the Doctor Who convention. It always comes, it's like in the Marriott that's like right near where I live. And I can never get a ticket. It's like one of those things like, I guess, Comic-Con, where it just sells out on the day.
Oh,
and
yes.
I can never get in. Like the next one is coming in February and it's already sold out.
Wow.
And I just can't, like, it just annoys me. Like, how about a couple more? Or how about, I don't know, put it in a bigger place if it's selling out that fast.
Right.
It's Comic-Con.
Yeah.
But I would love to go to this thing if I could ever get in.
Okay. All right. So you're trying.
I went to one Doctor Who convention years back, and it was a tiny little thing. That was when we didn't have all these fancy doctors. We had the, you know, the Tom Bakers, the Colin Bakers, the Patrick Troughtons, you know. And it was not quite the sort of worldwide phenomenon that it's become.
So you were one of those who realized that Doctor Who was cool early on. You're not some late adopter latching on to this trend. It seems like you should get extra credit for that, right? Like, no,
oh, yeah.
I liked it back when it wasn't cool.
Well, I mean, it was when I saw Tom Baker, and Tom Baker to me is probably one of my favorite actors. He is so good as in the role of the Doctor. He was the fourth Doctor. And when you watch him, what's great about those early Doctor Who's is that, you know, the special effects weren't maybe that great. The sets were, you know, whatever they could find around the BBC and glue it together and put some lights on it. But they had such great actors because, you know, actors like to work. So they would get these guys who would do Shakespeare and they'd come on and just act their asses off to, like, you know, whatever ridiculous creature that they put together. And, you know, Tom Baker was this guy who they kind of sort of plucked out of obscurity. I mean, he had done a couple of movies. He'd done like the Golden Voyage of Sinbad and some others. And I think Nicholas and Alexandra. But he is so good. He's so quirky and he really comes off like an alien. And to be able to bring that to a role, especially one that's kind of so low rent and be that convincing is quite a skill. And if anybody who's into the new Doctor Who hasn't seen any of the old ones, go back to the Tom Baker era and just enjoy.
Wow. All right. Well, I have to ask, you're obviously very passionate about Doctor Who. Do you have any Doctor Who toys, action figures, memorabilia of any sort?
Oh my God.
Uh-oh.
Are you kidding? I don't know where to put it all. It's like, my wife and I are going to, we're like planning for a new house so I can have a floor.
Oh my.
So, like I've got action figures. I've got older action figures. I love the Daleks. So I have like Daleks of every shape and variety. Ones like from the 60s to the newer ones they put out. Remote controlled Daleks, tin Daleks, glow in the dark. I mean like everything that, and now what's ridiculous is that there's so much of it now. And it's really good. It's really high quality. And I never thought I'd find a day where, you know, you could have the sonic screwdriver of pretty much every doctor. And you could, you know, get 19 different versions of the Tom Baker scarf on eBay. And it's just, oh, my God. Yeah, I love the stuff. And every time I go to Comic-Con, I always come back with, like, 5 more sets of action figures from something. Yeah. And my wife tolerates it, and she's also a giant Doctor Who fan as well.
Well, that's good.
And yeah, it's nice when you marry a nerd.
It helps, yes. It's you guys are
help.
Clearly soulmates.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah. Instead, you know, it was a refreshing thing when, you know, than when I was with girlfriends who were like, so when are you going to get rid of all this stuff? Listen, I am not the 40-year-old virgin. I am not going to sell all this shit to make you happy.
Yes.
Yeah. This was here before you, and it's going to be here after.
I've dated guys like you. You're, yes, you're lucky you found your wife.
Anyway, yeah.
Right, well, so explain to me, as I'm a Doctor Who novice, like, what is it about the Doctor? Are there certain key characteristics? Like, you know, I could talk about vampire slayers all day, but I don't know
We'll get into that, okay. you would like, there's actually a couple, there's a great Tom Baker episode or story that has vampires, but we'll get into that. But anyway, most Doctor Who fans realize, you know, he's from Gallifrey, the planet Gallifrey. He's a Time Lord. He has two hearts. He can regenerate himself when he's dying. He regenerates into another person.
Handy.
Which really has his sort of core personality, but with kind of different quirks.
Huh.
And that's also the amazing thing about the Doctor Who, just the whole Doctor Who lineage and show, is that all these actors have managed to be the same person, but in a different way. So it's quite a talent.
And
I have to say that, I mean, I pretty much enjoy all the Doctors. There's not one where I dislike them. There's ones that I've liked more than others, but they've all really done an admirable job. And the character's so great. I mean, it's like when you got this guy, he's super smart. He's not like your average action hero. He uses his brains. He uses his wit. He's really, usually very funny. Quite a fast talker. Likes the ladies.
Uh-huh. You know?
And who doesn't?
Hey, sure.
Right. Just a really unique type of hero. And a real strong sense of moral courage. And there's an old Tom Baker episode, and it's called Genesis of the Daleks, and it's when sort of the origin episode of the Daleks. And there's he's given an opportunity to stop the Daleks from ever existing. And because there's like these embryos that are in this lab, and he's going to explode them, and he's going to blow them up. Explode them? That's not a phrase. Anyway, so
make them go boom.
He's going to blow the bus. He's going to make him go boom. And he stops himself and goes, do I have the right to do this? It would be genocide.
Wow.
What about all the cultures that have brought themselves together to battle the Daleks? And, that's some nice, cool, heady stuff for a kid show.
Yeah. Well, how about this companion? What is a companion to Doctor Who or on Doctor Who?
Well, it's, I guess, the... what most people would agree with, I think, is that a companion is someone who, because he has a lot of people that are sort of regular characters. There was a time when he was stranded on Earth, and there was this guy in the Brigadier, who was this military guy that was kind of like sort of financing him while he was there. And he would be the guy, he would always help the Brigadier when there was some sort of alien threat to the Earth.
Okay.
But the Brigadier never really traveled with him in the TARDIS, and that's what I usually kind of go back to, is like, well, a companion is someone who gets in the TARDIS and goes with him somewhere and stays with him for a little while. Can't just be one trip, really. That would be really my definition. Someone who is like a true friend, a traveling partner.
Is it a human, or is it somebody from the Doctor's?
I don't think it doesn't necessarily have to be a human.
Hmm.
They're humanoid usually. One of his traveling companions was a robot dog, K-9.
Ah, fun.
Yeah. So, this is how deep I go. I listen to these audio adventures put out by this company, Big Finish. And they get the original actors, and they do these audio plays.
Wow!
And some of those, they're really good. For the most part, they're fantastic. And they will often have, you know, they'll create a new companion. And there's one this one series I've been listening with Paul McGann, and his one of his traveling companions was this full out, just full on alien.
Okay.
And, I'd like to see a little bit more of that in the new show. I think that would be fun.
So have there been like 100 companions, or how many companions have there been on Doctor Who? A dozen?
I mean, I don't really know. It has to be hundreds, I'm assuming. Because there's so many, or it's got to be a pretty big number, because they come and go, they change, and even back in the old days, sometimes he would have, well, I guess I'm trying to think of how many people Matt Smith had. No, I think Tennant had quite a few people. All right, I'm going off the rails here. I know that sometimes he's had like three companions with him at one point.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's a lot of people. And then they swaps them out. So, yeah, it's got to be a lot.
Okay. All right. Have any of the companions interacted with more than one doctor? Like, have there been companions that have outlasted the doctors or anything?
Yes. There was an episode called The Five Doctors, which was sort of an anniversary show that was during the time when Peter Davison, who was the fifth doctor, and he meets all the other, the previous doctors and their companions.
Oh.
And so there was a good opportunity there for everybody to kind of mingle a little bit. But I would probably say of all the companions that have been with Doctor Who, the one that's probably met the most other doctors, I'm guessing, is Sarah Jane Smith. One of my favorite companions, by the way.
Because
not only did she meet the previous doctor, she met one of the new age doctors, the new show doctors.
Right.
Tennant, to be specific.
And Matt Smith on the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you know what? I never thought. Was that the last season?
Yeah, with the death of the doctor. She met Seven, which is the most out of
any. Wow.
Yeah.
Now I have to get that last season. I never got to the last season.
Ah. Has there ever been a female doctor?
Well, that's a great question. I think there should be. I think that would be great. That would be really unusual. The one time there was a sort of comedy Doctor Who thing that they did for Comic Relief in England, where they did a spoof and it had Rowan Atkinson as the Doctor.
Oh, cool!
And it was actually written by Stephen Moffat before he was in the whole Doctor Who, the regular Doctor Who world. But and it was a really funny, really kind of a nice little nifty adventure. And the running joke is like within like 3 minutes, he regenerates about like four or five times because he keeps accidentally getting killed.
Yeah.
And so and it was great. It was like a lot of cameos. Like he regenerates into Jim Broadbent.
Oh, cute.
Four Weddings and a Funeral. What's his face?
Hugh Grant,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And then finally at the end, he becomes Joanna Lumley.
Oh, I only know her from Coupling, but... Oh, wait. Oh, that's right. From AFAB. Everything's from us. Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome from AFAB.
Yeah. And then the thing is how they wrap up the whole thing is that, you know, he's battling the Master through this whole thing. And he ends up... She ends up hooking up with the Master at the end. And that's how they mend their differences. And it was really funny. But I thought, like, Joanna Lumley would have been a great doctor.
Yes, that I am obsessed with AbFab, and I'm going to have to do something on AbFab at some point. So that would get me to over my hump. I would get full on into Doctor Who if Joanna Lumley.
You can find that online. You should,
all right,
you should go
I'm
online
look
and look
that
for that. It's called, The Curse. It's called The Curse of the Fatal Death.
The Curse of the Fatal Desk?
Yeah. Fatal death, as in dying.
Fatal death, sure. Because some of the deaths aren't fatal, so that's good to know. Well, too cool. All right, and now, of course, in honor of my blogging partner's love for bow ties, I have to ask, do any of the doctors wear bow ties?
Okay. Well, here's where I'm not sure. Because I know three do.
Okay.
But the first Doctor, William Hartnell, wears a kind of a tie, and it's not a regular tie. I don't know what they call that tie.
Huh.
Is it not a bow tie? It's like a, it's like one of those ties that sort of like hangs down, but it's not a, it's not like a regular dress tie.
It was, Hartnell had multiple types of ties or scarves, and he did have a 19th century bow tie with one of his with one of his outfits. So,
so
it
that,
is
that would qualify then.
Yeah, yeah. So I would agree with you. So,
yeah,
so
that four.
So four doctors wear bow ties.
Three clearly do, and one is, you know, on at least one occasion. Yeah, it's like that. That's a 19th century bow tie.
Okay. All right. All right.
Well, Matt, I have to say I am very impressed by your knowledge of Doctor Who. And so I think, you know what, I think you qualify as an expert witness if I had to put you on before a trial. And so I think now I can safely let you talk to Josh about Doctor Who and explain to me this episode called, what is it, Deep Breath?
Yeah.
And know that I'm getting
like
good input for both of you.
Okay. So, first things
Josh,
first,
go ahead. Take it over.
Matt, it's so nice to be talking to you again. For those
listening,
Matt was one of my favorite comedians who would appear at our comedy club back in the mid to late 90s, early 2001. My family owned Rooster Teeth Feathers in Sunnyvale. And Matt was one of the big names who would come through. And it was always fun when Matt would come to the club. And my mom adored him and was...
And I loved her, too.
Oh, she spoke very highly of you.
Yeah, and
great. Thank you. And, you know, you've done so well. And, like, you were the geek's geek with all of your... You know, I mean, like, before it was cool to... You know, your headshot was like in a Starfleet uniform with all your toys and comic books behind you. It was like, rock on. And,
yeah. All the ladies back then.
You know, Saturday, this is rather geeky, but I live in Silicon Valley. We had a elementary school reunion. So kids from third grade who are now parents themselves organized a barbecue. And one of my former classmates came up to me and she said, you know, I remember when you were a kid and you would talk about Doctor Who all the time. Well, now I love it. And my love of being a sci-fi was because of you.
And wow.
I was
that's
just like,
great.
Oh, it's just, you know, going to in San Jose, there was TimeCon. And I went there in 85 and 86. When Sylvester McCoy became the Doctor, Channel 54 had him for questions and autographs. And so, I mean, just cool stuff. And and now we have a super fanboy who's the newest Doctor. And
And who's wonderful.
Oh God, he seems like such a nice person in interviews. The way he treats fans. Did you see that cell phone video with him talking to the little girls?
I did not know.
Oh, so they were filming. You know how fans go and watch the filming. And as the article went, I think one of the little girls is autistic. I could be wrong on that. But regardless, you know, a five-year-old was having trouble with the regeneration because she really loved Matt Smith. And... Yeah. You know, and here's Capaldi down, you know, down to kid level, talking to this little girl and just the sweetest voice about how much he loves Doctor Who fans. And, you know, he gets out his phone and he pulls up a picture of like Kim and Matt Smith talking and how Matt wanted him to take care of the, you know, the Doctor Who fans. And it's just like this really sweet, super endearing video. It's like, what a wonderful person. And
well, it's like was it John Barrowman?
Mm-hmm.
Very similar, like fan, loves the fans, really appreciates like what this show has done for him, and I'm always amazed when somebody, you know, along the lines of like a Shatner, you know, tries to distance themselves from something that made them. I understand that you get typecast, but But, like, this is the thing that made you.
Yeah, that's giving you steady work. I would.
Yeah.
There are people who would, you know, absolutely love to have those opportunities.
Well, the modern equivalent is Chris Evans, right? Complaining basically about his Marvel role and how he's sick of it kind of thing.
Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah, that's amazing. And it's sad too, because I think he's great. I mean, they've picked all the right people for those things, and it's, you know, look, this is a job. No one will be more loyal than your genre fans.
Yeah.
When everybody else turns around and shits on you when you do some movie that nobody likes, those fans will defend you.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what it takes to get these people to recognize that. But, yeah, man, nerds are hardcore.
Yeah.
Well, that and... You know, we've kind of been in a wonderful era the last five, not quite 10 years, but definitely at least five of, you know, the geek renaissance.
I agree.
You know, we're not in the closet anymore for liking Doctor Who. It's not on at 11 o'clock on PBS and only a handful of us are talking about it. It's people love it all over.
Granted,
you know, it's like one of my friends who's, you know, she's posed and like done some of the Doctor Who t-shirts for me, you know, commented. She's like, you know, I wasn't into Doctor Who, but I am now. And she was talking at great length about what part of the series she was in. She was still working through the David Tennant episodes, was just about done with Tennant. And it's like, converted another one.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the thing, is that now the people who make genre things are the people that like it. It's not, you know, some TV producer who goes, oh, Star Wars was a hit, we'll do a show like that, you know. And it's now the fans are in control, and you know, that's why Guardians of the Galaxy is so good, because there's a guy who genuinely liked this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that. Imagine putting that guy in charge.
Yeah, and something good comes from it. Who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew?
Who would have thunk?
Yeah. But so I watched Deep Breath Saturday night, and last night I went to the theater to watch it. And I was impressed with seeing it on the big screen, just because of, like, history. Late night PBS. I thought it looked great on the big screen. There were parts that did make me feel good. You know, the fact that there's a huge homage to the Brigadier's final line in Planet of the Spiders after John Pertwee regenerates into Tom Baker with "Here we go again." That was
right.
I was like, "Well done, well done." Slow clap.
Yeah.
There were parts of the story where, like, eh. There were other parts I really liked, and I want to hear your. I mean, again, being a geek, what did you like, and what's your hope for the rest of season 8?
Well, I'm gravely concerned.
Okay.
Because I love everybody in it. I love Capaldi. I love Jenna. I think, you know, the casting's perfect. And it's kind of like, I wasn't a giant Matt Smith years fan. And again, it wasn't because of him. It's because, here's my theory. It's sort of like Lennon needed McCartney, and I think that Stephen Moffat needs Russell T. Davis. There was a depth and a heart to Russell T. Davis that I don't feel in the Moffat years. That it's a little too, you know, that bubbly music that plays constantly throughout every scene, that even when it's trying to be sort of grim or serious, there's something missing. And I don't know what happened, because of course, one of the best episodes of the Tenet years, Blink, was a Moffat script. So I know he has it in him, but I think, like, he's so bent on making this different from those other episodes that he it's too goofy. And I'm like, that Deep Breath one, there's so, like, I don't want any more comedy routines from Strax. I'm not a big fan of those characters anyway. The
Vistral and Jenny.
Monster gang or whatever.
I
don't think they're great characters. The Strax character just is really getting on my nerves. The whole, you know, medical examination thing that we're supposed to be doubling over laughing about is terrible. And there's so many things like, we have to get skin so we can build a balloon. What? I don't like. And then what really got me is the holding the breath thing. If you hold our breath, the robots won't know we're here. Well, now they know you're here. So why would, and then like, there's like, they, why, instead of holding your breath and then fighting them, how about holding your breath and then running away? Like, that's an idea. I mean, there's so many things like that where, like, they share the breath. And the, what's her face? Madame Vestra.
Yeah, purposely doing the first, you know, girl-on-girl/lizard-to-human kiss on screen on Doctor Who. Yeah, it's okay.
I'm fine with that, but that's a breath. And so that would have made the robots come alive. And
yeah.
So I'm just curious. So lizards exhale oxygen?
Yeah, and especially with all the biology cracks that they made in it, there were parts of the storytelling that were off the mark. And, you know, like when I think of Russell T. Davies, he wrote brilliant episodes and some of the worst episodes ever. And I think that was because of the writing style with how the British, you know, do their storytelling. There isn't that writer's room. They're doing it independently. And Moffat, I feel, is more consistent, but a lot of fans are disappointed.
I was just going to say, like, I mean, I actually don't, if you now add the Matt Smith years, there were whole seasons of that I thought, this is just rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
This is just terrible. And personally, the Time of the Doctor, that big regeneration season finale, was probably one of the worst episodes of Doctor Who I've ever seen. Just hideously bad. And like, just, oh, so now, you know, now we're going to give you a bunch more regenerations. Really? That's your, we just decided to give you some more. Wow. Well, that's some great story writing. And Christmas Town? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just nonsense.
Hey, I felt they were out of ideas after the 50th anniversary special.
Yeah, that would have worked better as the, you know, the last episode.
Yeah, I was disappointed with Smith's final episode because I thought he deserved better. You know,
he's not. I don't blame him for any of this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. It was the writing. It was totally the writing, and that was, you know, the fact that Moffat can hit home runs with Sherlock, or whatever. If it's a googly, because we're talking Brits, but. You know, that's disappointing. It is disappointing.
And also Moffat, you watch those Sherlocks. Those are a mixed bag as well, too. Mm. They'll go from brilliant to, I can't believe that you aired this. Like, it's so terrible. And I think I wonder if sometimes he tries too hard. Tries to be too cute. Tries to make it all, you can't, a quirky, you know, moment where somebody has some interesting patter or whatever. Like, if that's all you're doing all the way through, then it doesn't mean anything. And that was what got me annoyed during the Amy Pond years, is that she was almost like a female doctor. And like, well, you got to have a little bit of a straight man here. Everyone's just being too cute. Like, I don't know what to take seriously anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think part of that could be cured with Capaldi, but it will be interesting to see what happens. You know, the fact that they should put the kibosh on any like romantic interest is a good thing. And I would I would like to see a character like the Brigadier again, somebody who's the male friend, a Brigadier or a Jamie, type companion would be nice, because we haven't seen that quite in the modern era. And
yeah, I mean, what's his name? What's Amy?
Rory.
Rory was kind of a, he was always in the back seat, and same with God, I can't remember his
name. Mickey.
Mickey.
Yeah, with Rose's boyfriend. Yeah, it's third wheel, borderline, almost trapped in the friend zone. You know, you know, I want a Brigadier or a Jamie type character as a good friend, you know, as a companion. Yeah. And so, like, that's my hope. And apparently, there's somebody who's been cast, so I'm hoping that's where they're going. So we'll see. We'll see.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but Jenna Coleman's already gone, right?
I don't know. There's a rumor that she'll leave at the Christmas episode, but it's kind of weird to have somebody on world tour and have that slip out. But I mean, when you look at how Karen Gillan's doing, from Guardians of the Galaxy to being on a, you know, a sitcom, you know, this coming season, it's like power tour. I'm like, that's fantastic. And
yeah,
you know,
and it just goes to show you that Doctor Who doesn't really kill your career anymore.
New,
people like it. It's cool.
I think Jenna Coleman will have a long career. And, you know, again, I was thinking about this last night, watching her on the big screen. It's like, she belongs there. You know,
she's great. She's great. I love her. I think she's a great character. And I like, that's one thing I actually really did like that last season with her and Matt Smith. Probably my favorite of all seasons with him.
I did too. I got a little burned out on Amy and Rory after a while.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you know, it started all right, and then it's like, this, you know, love saved the day one too many times.
Right, yes.
And you can't say the girl who waited, you know, is more important than the guy who waited 2,000 years.
That, we know that never will happen.
Yeah, it's like, really? You know, that's... Do you have any idea how many karma points that's going to build up? I stood hard for 2,000 years.
And yet, you know, one thing goes wrong in that house, and he's the asshole.
Yeah, yeah, that's like, no.
All right. I feel like I need to put in a woman's perspective. I point out that over 2,000 years, he probably hasn't learned anything, and he's continuing to do the same obnoxious things for 2,000 years. So I'm blaming it on him. That's right.
You know what? That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, Kibble's a guy. 2,000 years, still a jerk.
Still can't pick up his freaking socks. Come on. This is why you need a woman on these things. The geek men start taking out their aggression at all the girls who turned them down for dates. And I'm like, all right, let's calm down here.
I think it's hurtful.
How do you know these things?
You can't hurt me anymore. You know? I'm not alone. Yeah, it's we're not flashing back to those who hurt us. We're sticking up for this guy. He waited 2,000 years. That should get him something.
I'm sure it would get him something. I'm just saying, after that initial charm wears off, you're like, you know, I would have hoped you would have learned a few lessons while you were out there for 2,000 years. That's all I'm saying.
Oh,
yeah, or you get really dull.
That's true.
You know, you've seen everything, you've done everything. Even if you're just standing, you've had a lot to think about, and maybe that, you know, after all that, you're just like, I don't know. What do you got to talk about?
Yeah. So going back to Peter Cushing, they tried, Moffat wanted to do an homage to him in the 50th anniversary special. He tried getting the rights to the Doctor Who movies so he could put the posters up in the Black Archive.
Oh, okay.
And so he wasn't able to get the rights to it, but that would have been, that he said that was the one thing they couldn't pull off, and he was upset about that. Which,
so they couldn't get the rights to put up a poster?
Yeah, which I thought was really weird for whatever company that was that still had those rights to go, no, we don't want to be part of a worldwide experience.
Yeah, no. Imagine, what if someone went, oh, what's that? maybe we should rent that, buy that, etc.
Yeah, I would think that'd be wonderful advertising and in spike in downloads, but that's the capitalist in me thinking. But yeah, I do share some of your concerns about this coming season. I am cautiously optimistic, and I was a fan of the Third Doctor, and so loved John Pertwee.
Yeah, great.
And apparently he was friends with Capaldi. So
right.
Yeah, when Capaldi was a kid, he sent a letter to the show, and Pertwee sent him a autographed script in return.
Wow.
And so, I mean, this is like the geek of geeks is the new Doctor, and which is, I think, a beautiful thing. You know, good will come.
Beautiful.
So.
Yeah, that's yeah, and that's how it should be. You would think that you would get more passion out of someone who is a fan of the thing that he's on. You know, that there's going to be, you know, and I felt, I really got the feeling, like Tennant really loved that show.
Mm-hmm. He did. I thought, now, one of the guys who was probably screwed over the most was Colin Baker of probably...
Oh, big time.
Yeah, you know, probably the first fanboy. Davidson enjoyed the show, I know, but I don't know if he would have considered himself like a fanboy growing up watching it. But Baker definitely was. And they screwed him with the costume and everything.
And every direction, like, and like, then, like, almost... I guess who was the person who was running the BBC at the time, but would like openly talk shit about him. He really got the shaft on that. And I thought, hey, you take the costume away, he's a great doctor.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and,
you know,
and like Baker, you know, Tom Baker is sort of like the exception to the rule in the sense of, you know, you get a good actor is going to play any role to the best of his or her ability. But the one thing that stood out with Tom Baker is, like, Tom Baker, like, thought he was the Doctor.
Uh-huh.
and that's what really made him so great, I think. He was a little insane.
Yeah.
Kind of like an alien.
Yeah. As part of the 50th anniversary, did you watch An Adventure in Time and Space with David Bradley?
You know what? I watched, I caught like the last 10 minutes. I've been meaning to rent it. And, but I heard that was not bad.
I loved it because the arc of the challenges that they had, you know, with the first woman executive producer at the BBC and the first Indian director, and it's like, go make a sci-fi special about cavemen and you have no budget. And like, so that is, you know, like the trials that they go through and casting,
yeah.
You know, Bradley, you know, Hartnell, and Bradley does such a magnificent job as Hartnell that, you know, it's like the last third focuses on him. And I just sobbed through the last third of because he just,
did they cover his racism at all?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little unfortunate.
Yeah, they left that out. But the other, they made him very endearing. But
at some point I want to see that from the very beginning. But I heard it was great.
Yeah, it was good stuff. Well, listen, Matt, I know you're busy. You're down in Hollywood. How can people learn more about what you have, because you have an awesome podcast and you have a show?
Oh yeah. Well, if you have the Playboy TV, I am the head writer and executive producer of a show called The Stash, which is sort of like, kind of like The Soup, but with adult content. And, that's going to be coming out in January. And, I also worked on a show called Foursome Walk of Shame for Playboy, which is also a really funny show. And it's this show that the Playboy had this show called Foursome, and it was sort of a hookup show, reality type thing. And some of the people who had come on were so either stupid or kind of douchey, or, and it made for some television that you wanted to make fun of. And so that's what they decided to do. They got a bunch of comics together. We watched the episodes, crack wise, and very entertaining. So yeah, so that's what I've been working on recently. And but you know, if you ever want to go to my Facebook, it's Matt Weinhold. I'm on Twitter. Our podcast called Monster Party is on iTunes, and you can also access that through Facebook. And we also have a Monster Party Facebook page, which is Monster Party, like one word. And we're on YouTube, and yeah, a lot of stuff out there. And I a while back, I actually wrote a couple episodes with a buddy of mine of Beware the Batman, and they aired one, and I heard they're supposed to air the rest of the season at some point, but I'm not sure if that's happened. So look for that.
Do you know what network or where that would be aired?
Oh, it's on it's the Cartoon Network.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I've enjoyed your Monster podcast. That is a lot of fun, and I have very fond memories of you at Roosters, and I remember a Christmas party and you know, your humor, so just lots of fun. So
well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
So it's, yeah, my mother would be very happy for you and where your career's gone. So just keep up the great work. So,
well, thank you.
My pleasure.
Yes, I think you're terrific too.
Aw, thanks, Matt. Well, I was going to say, I haven't known you as long as Josh, but I am now a fan. I'm going to have to check out some of this stuff. You also appear in one of the all-time great geek films, Trekkies, and so I'm going to have to go back and watch that again and look for you in there. But I've definitely got to see some stuff. If you ever have to do stand-up in Madison or get to do stand-up in Madison, Wisconsin, or in the great state of Wisconsin, anywhere, you'll have to let me know because I would love to see that.
Of course, yeah. And if you want to hear a bunch of nerds drunk, listen to our podcast.
I'm going to have to do that, too.
You know, I loved your Godzilla. Yeah, it's...
I know. Can I go over and drink with you? Josh won't let me drink and get drunk on our podcast.
No. I know. I'm a horrible human being. Just a horrible, horrible human being.
How dare you?
I know.
No fun, Josh.
I'm a sad human being, undeserving of love. I'll be sitting in the closet if anyone needs me.
Aww.
So,
he's the sad doctor.
Yeah. That being said, it's I'm super excited and optimistic. There is concern, so let's just hope it's...
unlike you, too.
Oh, about Doctor Who. I'm like, what are you sad and optimistic about? I'm like, Matt's prospects, me drinking during a podcast. You're talking about Doctor Who. Let's bring it back here so everyone knows what you're sad and optimistic about.
We're optimistic about all of it.
Yeah, yes. I think big picture.
Yeah, me too. I would be curious to see what we get with maybe some different writers, different, you know, Mark Gatiss, let's see what he can come up with. And so, yeah. And I really like the Doctor, so I'm always rooting for the show.
Same here. Well, the fact it's on and strong, and you know, it's like I coach a high school mock trial team, and it's amazing that over half the kids are Doctor Who fans.
And yes, I'm experiencing that as well.
It's like, whoa, this is awesome. Yeah. That, you know, it's when I saw Day of the Doctor in the theater, two of my mock trial students walked by. I was like, you guys are here? So, with the dad.
Everybody I know, like, their kids, like, you know, Dana Gould's daughter loves Doctor Who, so.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. Well, everyone, follow Matt. Matt's a great guy. Follow Monster, follow Monster Podcast on Twitter. That's Monster Podcast.
It's actually called Monster Party.
Oh, Monster. I'm sorry. This and I'm not drinking. Monster Party HQ.
we have you on the show, we're going to destroy you.
As I name all the vice presidents in order with, you know, after a couple shots. Yeah, that will be a fun things I did in law school with naming chief justices in order after drinking. So, yes, that will be highly entertaining. So
it will be. We're going to make that happen.
Look forward to it. So, everyone, America, stay geeky. And Matt, thank you again.
Thank you. This was great.
Thanks, Matt.
Take care, everyone.